Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Breaking Point Podcast UK. Today, we're here with Tyler DeCruz, which I've decided is the coolest name of any guest I've had on so far. So that we're off to a good start. And yeah, Tyler, I'm going to let you introduce yourself.
I think so. Yeah, I think you introduced yourself quite well. But yeah, I'm Tyler. Most of you probably would know me from recently the show Chaos Weekender. But yeah, obviously you'll get to know me a little bit more when we start speaking, obviously, on the podcast.
Yeah, so we didn't meet actually, but I saw Tyler speak at an event in Portsmouth. He was speaking about mental health, and that's, I suppose, one of the reasons we're talking today. Possibly the biggest reason, but it's not the only reason. We could talk about other things as well. And yes, so do you want to give people a little sort of introduction as to what happened and what went on at the what you spoke about at the event?
Of course. So me at the event, basically, I had been on my own sort of journey and my own story. I hit a rock bottom point at one point, and it got to a point where I decided that life just wasn't good enough, which it was shit. It was the lowest point I've ever been, lowest point I've ever felt. And it just hit one afternoon. I was going to a really, really cool job of mine where I've been, as I say, been working with some amazing brands, and I was on my way to one. And then I got a comment basically on social media, which just triggered me. And this comment said, go kill yourself. You don't deserve to be here. Your life isn't worth living. And as I say, it triggered me. So I left the train station, saw a multi-story car park and thought, you're right, basically, to everyone that had been putting those comments. So I walked up it and sat basically on that ledge for God knows more than 3 hours, just sobbing. I honestly was sobbing my eyes out, and I'm not a man that cries usually, but it was the first time I just let loose. I couldn't control myself. Just cried and cried and cried on the ledge until somebody below actually heard, and she just screamed up, from what I remember, like, are you okay? And for me, that just set me off even more, because it was the first time that somebody had ever said to me in a long time, are you okay? And it just broke me. So I sat, as I say, up on that ledge for another hour, just contemplating what to do. And then got talking with a lovely negotiator, police officer, who we built a bit of a rapport with. And it was the first time I'd ever really spoken about how I'm actually feeling. And it was the first time, as I say, I offloaded. But even offloading at that point wasn't good enough. And I decided to still try and jump. So I did. I leant over and had done it. However, I was very, very lucky that I had spoken to this woman, and we'd built a rapport that meant she got close to me in an aspect where it meant that she was able to grab me for her dear life and my dear life. And she, as I say, she was a small woman, so she must have just been holding on forever just to pull me back over that ledge.
That's mad.
And then I just sat on the car park floor and just cried, basically, and was angry. I just cried and was angry about that she'd stopped me, which is mad to think. Why would you be angry at someone that's just saved your life? But
yes. I remember you saying that at the time.
Mm.
And you made a good point during the talk. You said that a lot of people are really happy when something like that happens, that they've been saved, or that the, you know, the things weren't run out to completion, so to speak. And you and I, but I can see it makes logical sense why that wouldn't, why your response is in a way a more logical outcome. Because if you've reached that point, it makes sense that you would still remain in that point. But it also is interesting how we are fighting for our lives in ways that we don't know. And that's why people have that immediate change of heart as well. So both sort of outcomes make sense to me, to be fair.
But yeah, I think, as you just said, some people would turn around and be relieved. And obviously at the time, I look back now and I am relieved, of course. But as I say, at the time, I was angry because she had just taken the only one thing that in my mindset at the time was the only control that I felt I had. And she had just taken that from me. And in my head, it's crazy to think that I was angry at someone for saving my life. But yeah, it's the mindset that I got to. I got to that point that was so low that I still didn't want to be here. And then, as I mentioned previously, at the event where it took me a good few weeks even to just be able to go, actually, I'm still sad, but I'm glad that I'm sad and I can feel the sadness because now I need to change my life. And this is the point where I have to start. And that's when kind of obviously I then started to realize actually this woman is amazing that saved my life. But it's now about talking and getting the help that I needed.
Yeah, absolutely. So at what point in, because I don't know if I've already mentioned, I think maybe you mentioned, but you were on the Cavos Weekender, which is, for anyone that doesn't know, is it kind of like a Love Island type show?
But yeah, kind of. So it's a very fun show. Basically, I was a rep on the show and we would get guests that would come every today. The guests would come for 2 days a time and we would just basically give them the best time ever. We would party with them, we would drink with them, we would even get with them. Like, it was just wild. It was a fun show, full of lots of drama as well, but wasn't really a Love Island sort of vibe because you didn't have to date people. It was more just a, we were there as reps to give the guests a good time, but the drama was a lot between reps, if that makes sense, because we're living with our reps full time. So there's a lot of drama when it came to that.
Yes, I can imagine. And then when I was researching you, I discovered something about you that I thought, okay, well, I won't bring that up because I didn't think you'd want to talk about it. But then I watched I've just been listening to a podcast with you talking about it, and I was like, okay, so maybe we can talk about it, but I don't want it to subsume the whole episode because it's not what it's about. But
of course,
is that what do you think caused someone to send you that message in hindsight? Was there an overlap?
I would say a little bit of both. Like, it was, you're always going to get people that hate you for things you've done in the past, for things you might
genocide as well.
Exactly, you're always going to have people that hate you. But I got some horrible messages in regards to my past, and especially if people will listen to that podcast, you'll actually realize that past wasn't a choice. Well, it was a choice, obviously everything's a choice in life, but there was a lot more insight to it, of being manipulated and basically enticed into something, which was a very, very hard period of my life. But people won't see that. People will just see what they want to see. And that's where a lot of people need to think a lot before making judgment on people, because they don't know the ins and outs of it. And it's something that no one will really speak about, not just me, many other people, not just in that industry, but in general life. Like, they could, I'm a big believer on, even if someone's committed a crime, let's say, like, they've done the wrong, they're probably not grateful and glad that they've done it. However, there's probably an insight of why they've done it, regardless if it's right or wrong. There's always a story that someone else doesn't know. So I think, yes, there was a lot of triggers in that, where when obviously going on the show, it came off the show and we kind of knew it was going to come out, because me and ITV knew about it. So when we were filming, and they were completely fine with it and they were great. So we knew it was going to come out. The Sun, typical newspaper, were the ones that were straight on it and wanted to cause mayhem. But it was funny because the actual, as I say, we were prepared for it, but, and all my close people around me knew about it before. So it was a past thing in my, before I even went on the show. So a lot of the loved ones and stuff knew about it. And then all of the new people, let's say, who then now show an interest in my life because of the show, then got to have their kind of opinion kind of on it. And yeah, as I say, it was just a tough time. And I think some of those messages probably, yeah, were related to that. As I say, you get a lot of people that just, I call it not educated. I think that's the biggest thing. They're not educated. I don't want to call them horrible people. I just think they're not educated and don't realize that people have a past and people move on from their past and don't know the ins and outs. But yeah.
Yeah. Well, what's so amazingly awful about social media is that it gives a platform for someone, for a single person to be attacked in a way that almost no one can actually relate to, because it's probably never been, unless you were like a king or a queen or someone who was being, you know, marched out in the streets and everyone was shouting off with their head, off with their head, to have that much hate thrown at you, despite it being through the form of social media and it through being on a screen, it's still incredibly, on so many levels, incredibly painful. So, you know, most people can't relate to that at all.
Yeah.
And that's something that only, yeah.
Yeah, no, I think it's one of the hardest things as well. I think sometimes when it is in person, it's never nice still, but it's actually in person. So you know who that person is. And I think,
yeah, exactly.
When it's online, a lot of people are hidden. They hide behind a screen because they know it's wrong what they're doing.
Exactly.
Which is the worst. They know it is wrong. Otherwise, if they didn't, they would use their normal accounts. And that's the hardest part, because you then, yes, struggling with it online, but I don't know when I'm going to the places that I love to go into, like when I go to, it sounds silly, but if I go to football, or if I go to the park, or if I go and do to the cafe that I always go to, in my head psychologically now I'm thinking, is the person at the cafe who I say hello to every morning, is that actually the person? Like, and it's probably not, do you get what I mean? But on social media it's a lot worse, because it then affects your mental health in real life. And social media is fake at the end of the day. It's real in terms of you're a person on social media. However, me posting a photo online, that's just a photo online. I could be the most depressed person that day, but because I smile, you think my life is absolutely amazing that day. So yeah, I think that's one of the biggest things when it comes to social media. It's hard because, yeah, you don't know
the anonymity.
Yeah,
exactly. It's dangerous. Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
And you bring up social media, and this was when I was watching you talk, I was like, oh, if I get to speak to him, this is a question I want to ask him. You put up all those photos of you, you know, like on a yacht, girls, clubs, lights, people, and you said something along the lines of, this was me at my most depressed. And there was another guy that also spoke that's a rubbish way of describing him, but not George, the other guy, and he said sort of a similar story. So what is that, what you, how do you handle a moment like that when you reach that point that in theory society is pushing us towards, and then you think, oh dear, this is not what I was expecting to happen. Where do I go?
Well, obviously, at the time, it was, I saw that one path, but I look back on it now, and obviously, I wouldn't say that I'm amazing. Of course, I'm going to have down days now. But when I get those down days,
of course, yeah,
it's my mindset basically is I channel it in the sense of if I'm happy in myself, then what anyone else says or does can't really beat me. I have a very important saying, kind of, it's like, you can beat me, you can bruise me, but you will not break me. So you can call me names, you can say whatever you want, but you will not break me now. So they're just scars. I have scars on my body. I've from where I've broken arms and elbows, but that scar on my elbow isn't something that's sticking with me for life. It's just something in the past that's just there. It's just on the side. And now I'm 10 times stronger because of that. So
yeah,
it's just having that mindset now of just saying, I'm okay. And if I'm okay in myself, and if the people that I care about are okay with who I am as a person, then nothing else really matters to me, because I don't know, realistically, I don't know John or Paul or Sophie. So their opinion doesn't really bother me too much. Whereas in the past, it did. In the past, it was like, oh my God, I need your approval. Whereas now, the only people's approval that I need is the most important one, is my own. And if I'm happy and content in myself, then there's no breaking me.
I like that. You can beat and bruise me, but you can't break me. Do you think that moment on top of the multi-story car park was quite influential in you reaching that sort of mindset shift?
100%. I'm very grateful, and it's probably sound weird now. I'm grateful that that moment actually did happen, because without that moment, I wouldn't be, one, as strong as I am now, but two, I wouldn't know simply how to deal with things. So I would probably just be feeling depressed and sad and maybe just thinking about doing things and not doing it, and then feeling even more depressed. So I'm kind of grateful that that moment did happen, because it's now changed my life in the way of my mindset's better, my mental health's better, but also I'm able to find my purpose. Like, at that point, I didn't really know what I was doing with my life. Like, yes, I'd just been on a really cool TV show and things like that, but I didn't know what I was actually wanting to do. And now it's made me realize, actually, my purpose was to help other people. And that's through my own story. So, as I say, I'm grateful kind of for what has happened.
Yeah. There's kind of two things in that, I suppose. One is there was a study done by some guy who I think was the ex-CFO creative director of Google. And he called it the eraser test. And he asked people, if you could go back and undo or have not happened to you the worst possible experience, would you get rid of it? And most of them said no, they wouldn't, they would keep it, because it taught them things and it turned them into people that they're so proud of who they've become. And it doesn't really make sense how something like that could occur in some ways, but also it does, because, like, the other point is, we can sometimes float in sort of no man's land in life, not really too great, not really too good. And we don't really know, we don't have that anchor that can say, this is how bad it can get, but then this is now how good it can get. We're floating around, and you had that moment where you were like, this is how bad it can get. And now anything above that is almost, it's an improvement to some degree.
But that's literally, I wake up every day and I say to myself that I'm glad I'm here, and I'm worth being here. That's my biggest saying every morning, is I'm worth waking up today. And that is because nothing can get to that point now. So as I say, every day, even if I have a bad day, which is normal, it's never going to be as bad as that day. So you could mean, that's how I look at it now. When I am having a bad day, I'm like, actually, I'm having a bad day, but it's better than when it was that time. So it can't be as bad. Yeah. I just now need to, tomorrow's going to be a better day than today. So it's just, yeah, it's just changing that mindset. But as I say, I also like think as well that what changed me as well was actually speaking. Because I think that's one of the biggest things as well, that like when you don't speak about your feelings, it just bottles up and sooner or later you are going to explode. And that's what happened that day. Like I exploded because it wasn't just that comment that made me do that. It was years and years and years of other stuff probably as well that was bottled up. And when you speak about your problems, as I say, just even that one, that even on that ledge, like by speaking, that calmed me down a tiny bit for her to get close. So it's a massive stigma at the moment and in life with men, especially men, that we're not allowed to talk or we're not allowed to say how we feel. And it's absolutely bollocks. In my opinion, I think speaking is actually the bravest thing you can do. And it shows your character. So I think if anyone is struggling, they just need to speak. What was mad is my partner now, it was similar to that. So we had never met. And we were actually currently speaking at the time of when I decided to try and kill myself. Like we had been speaking for about a few weeks. And when I got into the hospital, I sent her a message and she was like, oh, are you on your way now? And I was like, no, I'm in hospital. I've tried to kill myself. And for someone who you've just been speaking to for like 2 weeks, at that point, most people would go, what the flip am I getting into here? Like, what's going on? And she could have ran a mile. However, within an hour and a half, she was at the hospital beside my bed, someone that I'd never, ever met. And for me, that opened my eyes, because it opened my eyes to show, one, that there's people that actually care, and two, that this is something special and there's something good that's going to come in life. So again, it was me actually saying and admittedly admitting, look, I'm in hospital, I need help, and someone not going, ignoring me about it. And they actually went, yeah, you do need help, but I'm going to stand by you. And that then made me feel belief that I could then go on further to go and speak to a therapist, a counselor, and more people. Because without that moment, I don't think I would have. I think I would have potentially gone back into a spiral and just been that manly, you know, like I can't do it. But when somebody turned around and went, you're right, you do, and I'm going to stand by you, is the biggest thing. And I think that was a massive game changer in my life now.
That's, and fair play to, that's an incredibly admirable thing for her to do. And I'm so glad that that occurred for you and that it's possible for something like that to happen, because nowadays a lot of influencers out there that tarnish women.
Mm-hmm.
And there is some truth to the things that they say. You know, women wait for the winner, wait to the end of the finish line and then pick the whoever comes first. And there is truth to that. But I find that such an incredible story, how that is, well, the story that you've just told. So yeah, keep good hold of her, because that's
100%, she's a great woman.
Yeah, good. Right, let's take it back to childhood.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk a little bit about what was your childhood like and what was your childhood like? That's a good question starter.
It was good. Like, I was brought up with two loving parents, which I think any kid wants, is to be loved by both their parents. So I was brought up in a very good household. Didn't have loads. I lived on a council estate, with a lot of trouble in West London. However, I was always kept away from it in a way. I was excelling in football at a young age. So that kind of kept me away from the trouble side of things, because my parents were like, let's just get you to training, come back. And I had that mindset of, I'm going to be this football player, which every young lad thinks. But then, of course, things do change. Like, my parents split up and when I was about 14, 15, and that, it broke me. Like, I would never, and never once showed that it broke me, but inside it broke me, because I didn't know how to deal with having two parents that didn't want to be together. And it wasn't amicable, really. So for me, that was quite hard to see, that my mum was angry with my dad and my dad was angry with my mum. But I didn't understand what was going on. Like, so that was tough for a 14-year-old. And then I had two older sisters as well, they're older sisters. So you don't really speak to them on that level of that sort of stuff. So again, I just kind of bottled that up, and that kind of sat with me until, I would actually say until quite recent, where everything hit me when I actually sat in a therapy session and they said to me, what happened about your childhood? And I was like, actually, shit, like, it was good in terms of having two loving parents, but being between them all the time was hard. Like, I didn't know who to choose. And as a young person, that's never nice, because you want to be happy with your mom, you want to be happy with your dad, and then that obviously causes friction sometimes. And it caused a lot of issues throughout until 17, 18, and then
I can imagine.
It was a bit tough.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and also with two older sisters, you're the baby, you're the 14, 15 is a really pivotal age or something like that to sort of occur. And just as you're developing at such a sort of exponential rate, something like that occurs and you have to, you know, shoulder it. And, you know, you've got GCSEs and stuff like that. It's all building up. So that's fair enough. How did you discover football? Because you played for Reading, didn't you?
I had a good scholarship as well. I was at Brentford for majority of my scholarship, and then had a few. So it was good. I kind of just got picked up. Funny enough, I was playing Sunday League I was in a very good Sunday League team, to be fair. We had, to be fair, I think 8 or 9 of the boys still were playing at a very high level. So we had a very good team, winning everything, and our team just got picked up. And I got picked up by Watford at the time, and I spent a lot of time playing for Watford, and then I got released. And I was like, whoa, like, I was this, the kid that, you know, everyone in the school knew as Tyler played for this team. Like, and the moment I got released, I was like, whoa, because I remember the day, and it was brutal, because I used to take my parents used to take me and one of my good friends at the time who was playing, and we were both in the same team, and he's like lived with his grandparents, so they couldn't drive and stuff. So we took him, and it got to the day where it was like judgment day, and he was put into one group and I was put in the other, and we were a bit like, what's going on? And he obviously got told, yeah, you're going to be staying. And I got told I wasn't. And for me, that was the most soul-destroying thing, because I was like,
must have been.
Like, what am I going to tell my friends at school? Like, everyone's going to think he's a nobody now. And that was that's what I mean. That was the mindset that I had, that I had to be somebody. And I think that was probably the moment where then I always thought that I had to be someone, and I had to be like up here, because I was like, I have to get back to that status of being liked.
Yeah, of course. I feel like being released from a football club as a young person must be one of the most sort of under appreciated difficult things to go through in terms of, I mean, I know that sounds awful, things happen to young people, but if you've been like doing this and then you're released, I just can't imagine how, because it's unlike anything else to some degree. You know, if you're trying to be a singer or an actor, you don't get released in like a formal bullet point way. It's kind of like, oh, you didn't get that audition, or oh, well, they don't want to sign you. But that's it, like you come into training one day. I mean, how does it work, and how did you've touched on it already, but how did it feel?
It felt shit, but it was more,
yeah,
I think it was the hardest part, as I say, was the fact that my friend got it. And that sounds so horrible, because I'm so glad for him. Do you know? And he's actually had a really good career, and we're very good friends still, and I love him to pieces. But at the time, I was like, why you? Like, why do you get it and I don't?
Yeah.
And I think that's the hardest part, is to say, for some, you know, let me take that back a little bit, where you do something that you love. So football was something that I love. Yeah. So it was, yes, I was at a good level and it was serious, but I didn't see it as serious because I loved it. So then when I got released, I saw it as, I hate it, because I was like, why am I going to love something that doesn't love me in a way? That's how I saw it. I saw
it makes complete sense.
And football is all about opinions, just like life. Life is all about opinions. But yeah, at that point, I was just like, I don't want to play football ever again. And it was a good few years, actually, that I just decided that I'm not going to play football. And it was my parents that turned around and said, you need to play football. Like, you love doing it. It's your stress release sort of thing. And then I kind of got back into it at a smaller level and just, as I say, started to enjoy it again. So, but at the time, obviously, it was soul destroying.
Yeah, of course. I can imagine that's a difficult thing to go through. Absolutely. You said something a minute ago, and, you know, fair play to you for getting through it. Absolutely. You said something a minute ago, how you felt like you had to be someone, you were trying to be someone. Do you still feel like that?
No.
In any way?
Not at all. No. I just need to be the best version of myself. And if I'm the best version of myself, then I'm the happiest. Whereas, as I say, before, I had to be the happiest for other people. I wasn't ever happy for myself. I was happy if other people were happy seeing me like that.
Yeah. How would you feel on a daily basis about things? How is your sort of headspace now? And what activities do you engage in that you think keep you regulated? And what would you recommend other people to, thought patterns to try and implement, or behaviours?
Of course, I think, well, for me now, my headspace is the best it's ever been. But to get to that place, again, I'm going to go back to saying, do what you enjoy doing. Like for me, I enjoy playing football. So I enjoy going on a Saturday. I play for a team now still, which I go on a Saturday, I get to enjoy it. As much as it's still serious, but I'm doing something I enjoy. I like going out with the missus. I like sitting at home and watching a film, doing the things that you like doing, not what other people want you to do. Because they're the things that help you relieve those feelings. Like, I go to football sometimes and I've had a really, really shit morning or shit week. And then after I've gone and played football, I haven't forgotten it, but I've let half of that feeling go through tension or stress just by being outside. And I think going outside as well is one of the biggest factors. Like, I think if you can just even go for a walk for 5 minutes, if you're ever stressed, depressed, or even lonely, go just outside. Walk around your block if you only have a little estate, or in your garden, just walk around it for a couple of times, then go back inside, and I guarantee you will feel better because you're outside and your mind is just like, I think you just got to take yourself away from the situation of whatever you're in. So if you're sat in your bedroom, go and sit downstairs. If you're sat downstairs and that's where the problem is, go to your bedroom. Like, take yourself away from the situation and just breathe and just go, I'm okay. Because it's okay to just step away for 5 minutes and just take a break. I think too many people don't take a break and they just try and continue and continue, where you've just got to take that step back sometimes and just go, I'm actually okay here.
Yeah, if you keep banging your head against a brick wall, eventually you're going to bruise up. And the more you 100%. Do, the more you're going to bruise up. And you're absolutely right about changing your state, whether that's environment, physical state, mental state, in terms of what you're exposing yourself to. That can create sort of bodily changes, and then in turn that can create mental changes. Let's go back to the sort of the genre of like Cavos Weekender. Do you think these sorts of shows, Love Island, Cavos Weekender, Too Hot or Not, do you think that they are having a detrimental impact on young people?
Yes and no. Because,
okay,
yes, in terms of, we'll start with no, actually. No, in terms of like, they are good opportunities for you if you want to venture out your career in other aspects of it, is TV, of it is social media, and it does create you a platform. A lot of these shows, like, especially if you look at things like Love Island, you'll go on Love Island and a lot of people will come off Love Island with hundreds of thousands of followers or millions of followers.
Yeah, yeah.
And so yes, it can benefit you. However, overall, I think TV industry is very negative, because you're giving yourself kind of you're putting yourself in the public eye, first of all, which is fine, and it's, as I say, it gives you that platform, but you're also kind of a bit like a sheep, you're just following what the TV show want you to do. You don't really have much opinion and say on what goes on. I can only talk, obviously, on my show. I know people that have been on Love Island as well, and they've had the worst times, as you can see. There's been quite a few people that have actually taken their life from Love Island, which is crazy. And it's because of poor management after the show, as in the healthcare afterwards. You don't get as much support as I think you should. I came off the show, and to be fair, ITV were okay. They would, how they put it, they would say to us, do you need support? As in, if you need support, call us. However, in my eyes, that's not good enough. They need to make you basically have the support, in a way, because the only time that they actually stepped it up was when I had tried to kill myself. And for them, I think, and it wasn't, this is my opinion, it wasn't because they wanted to look out for me. It was because they wanted to protect themselves from.
Of course, yeah.
And I fully get that as well. It's a business at the end of the day. You're going to protect yourself. But yeah, for me, it was I think the aftercare needs to be 10,000 times better. And last little bit on it, like, now they are getting better on it because of how much has happened recently over the years. And I know, like, now they don't let you have social media, you know, if you're like on the show, in the sense of like Love Island at the moment, someone can't control your account, or Big Brother. Like, I've got a friend that's in Big Brother at the moment, and his account, he's not even like, no, I couldn't manage it. It has to be
really. Oh wow.
Yeah, like, you have to, if his account's actually private, but if I went on and unlocked his account, he would get kicked out of the show, because that'll be in his contract that you can't be on it. It's just to protect them from a bit of hate and stuff like that. So I see that there's a positive, but at the same time, it doesn't protect you, because the moment he comes out of that show and he's he turns on it regardless. People, like, he's going to get it, like, good or bad. So
yeah,
I think it's good if you want to, like, give yourself a platform, but then it's bad for your mental health. I don't think I could speak to so many people who have been on TV shows, and I guarantee you at one point they'll say to me, yeah, no, it affected my mental health badly at least one point.
Yeah, and there's something, the amount of attention that it brings to you, and then just how superficial young people can be in terms of television stars, and how they can just pick you up and take you to the highest height, and then they'll just drop you. And also from the point of the producers, like, if they want to drive a certain narrative of you, of this guy's the villain
100%
and this guy's the hero, they will drive that narrative. And they'll, as I'm sure you're very well aware, they will deliberately leave out certain things and put in other things to fit the story that they're trying to create. So it's a dangerous game that you play with these people sometimes.
I think that's the biggest thing.
You have to be careful.
Yeah, like, I, even on the show, for instance, my show, I was portrayed very, very well on the show, thankfully, by the producers. Yes. But as you say, like, it could have gone the other way. Like, we had another guy on the show, Joel, who is honestly the most loveliest boy that you will ever meet. Like, he genuinely wouldn't hurt a fly. But he was just portrayed as this bad character that messed all the girls around one of the other reps around. But, and it's mad because the influence, as you said influence quite well, that people look and see that, is we've been out and stuff, and people would say, oh, Ty, you're the fun one on the show. Joel, you're a prick. And I'm like, no, he's not. Yeah. Like, and he was good. He can handle it. But at the same time, it's, as you say, it's so true how you're in their hands. If they want to make you that dick, you're that dick.
What are you hoping to achieve in the next 5 years or next year, however long a time frame?
So for me now, it's sharing my story to basically just help as many people as I can. If I can help one person for every time I'm in a room speaking to people, or on a podcast even, if I can help one person who listens to me, then I've done my purpose in life. So my aim is now to just continue to go into schools, colleges, universities. I want to get into schools and colleges on the curriculum at some point, if it's in 5 years or 10 years, actually once a week, where you have a lesson on mental health and social media, because it's the biggest thing now in life. It is the Brilliant biggest idea, thing, yeah. Especially with that age range of secondary school. Everyone wakes up and the first thing they do is look at their phone. And
yeah,
I want to get into schools now and say, look, actually, they need to have some sort of education on it. So my aim is, as I say, to get into the schools and colleges and universities to get this program kind of up and running. And it's going to take a bit of time, but I've spoken to quite a few schools and they're on board already. So it's just getting that motion in now. So yeah, within, as I say, 3 years, I hope to be in more than 100 schools, just talking and sharing some more positivity to help others.
Yeah, and also the need for that,
it's
will
massive.
Only grow and grow and grow.
Yeah.
But it's just going to go like this.
Agreed. But I had it before already. Someone said exactly what you just said. The need is to grow and grow and grow. But at the same time, it can grow and grow and grow and no one do anything. It needs to grow and grow and grow, but be stopped before it gets grown, if that makes any sense.
Exactly.
So it needs to be tried to get in as soon as possible. So yeah, fingers crossed that we can just keep pushing it. As you say, so many people need that support, so we'll get there.
Do you get any DMs from anyone, like, asking for advice or questions, or what's your reception now amongst that kind of community and online community?
It's massive. It surprises me actually how many people are influenced by what I do and what I say and my story. I get, I would say, a minimum 30, 40 DMs from people, especially if I've posted as well. Especially if I've posted something, I would say I get about 30 or 40 DMs from just people saying that I've inspired them, but not even that I've inspired them, just that they're struggling. People actually reach out to me and say, I'm really sad, Tyler, like, I don't know what to do. And it's hard because, and I'll admit that it's very hard because I'm not a mental health professional.
Yeah, of course.
I'm just a someone that's been through something, and it's crazy. But at the same time, for me, it's amazing that someone can reach out to me because they feel comfortable to reach out to me. And I'm then able to say to them, you know what? I can't physically help you here, but these are the people you need to go and speak to, and just advise them on, go and speak to the Samaritans are amazing, by the way. They're one of the biggest people that I can big up. They're huge, because you don't know who's behind the phone. You just talk and say goodbye. They don't tell you what to do as well. That's the biggest thing. Yeah. They will never tell you what to do. They'll just talk to you. So yeah, to answer your question, I get a lot of DMs about thank yous and inspiring them, but also people telling me their stories, and they're telling me their stories because they want to release it. And that's an amazing thing. And it shows that they're being brave as well, because I don't know them, they don't know me. We're just two people behind the screen that share something similar, and we both just want to offload our problems to someone.
Yeah. And I suppose that's the polar opposite of what we spoke about right at the beginning, in terms of you getting hate messages,
yeah,
is that you also can get, messages of how much you've helped people, or how much just them feeling comfortable with you to share their story. And that's also a blessing, as much as it's a responsibility, as you've just mentioned, it's also a blessing as well. And that's, and you know, as you, the great part about you is that you're already on a path and you already have some traction. So it's easier to start off. Once you have traction, you can just keep going and going and going. It's about getting that little bit of traction, and you have that traction. So you're in a very fortunate position there to keep
Definitely.
Spreading message and building connections.
100%.
Which is brilliant.